If you boil down the Government Accountability Office's list of federal programs at high risk, ultimately you get to the hard pit of the problem, people. That's why Strategic Human Capital Management made this year's high-risk list. For the Veterans Affairs Department, low morale and difficulty attracting talent are two of the challenges. Joining me with her take on VA, Margot Conrad, Director of Education and Outreach at the Partnership for Public Service. Margot, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Yeah, VA didn't get cited specifically for human capital, but we know that they do have trouble there, and it has been the subject of a lot of congressional inquiry and whether there's enough accountability, ease of firing, and so forth. But I wonder if what they're talking about would really help all that much in the long run.
Yes, absolutely right. There has been a lot of attention on VA in recent times, actually going back the last couple of years, and there continue to be challenges there. A lot of the focus from Congress has been on issues of accountability, as you said, and how is it that VA can deal with poor performers and fire feds faster. But here at the Partnership for Public Service, we would really argue that one of the key things that VA should be focusing on and that Congress should be focusing on is really how to help VA close that skills gap. They have a huge hiring need, and if they can bring the right people in with the right skills and then focus on developing that talent and ensuring that they're able to retain it, that is going to go a long way towards addressing morale and ultimately performance issues at VA.
Are there skill gaps in medicine and nursing and those direct issues that they deal with veterans, or is it in other areas like IT and management in general?
So that's a very good question. So there's roughly 48,000, almost 50,000 positions that are currently vacant at VA, and there's a wide range of the types of skills that are needed. There is a hiring freeze, as you know, across the federal government, and luckily VA has been able to get exemptions for many of these positions, although I believe there's still about 12,000 or so positions that are not exempt, and therefore VA will not be able to fill all 48,000 that it needs to fill. But the positions that they're looking to recruit are things like nurses, physician assistants, medical officers, physical therapists, social workers. The list goes on. There's actually a long list of individuals and the types of skills and positions that they need to be filling. So there's a lot of need there, and VA, you know, really needs to make it a priority to be able to fill these positions.
One of the big issues they've been facing is they can't seem to get a new scheduling system done or acquired or coded or whatever it is. It seems like a dozen programmers for 2 years could get the whole thing licked.
Well, it's a good point. And I think, you know, part of what the argument is that I would make is that if VA isn't able to attract the talent that it needs, you're going to see pretty serious consequences. So, for example, you're going to see a decline in patient services. You're going to see increased backlogs in processing benefit claims or longer wait times to see doctors and things like that. So that's why it's really critical. And actually, I wanted to go back to your earlier question. You mentioned what positions are they looking to fill and which ones may be exempt. So actually, when you look at the list, HR is not exempt from the hiring freeze. And that is a concern because if you're going to be bringing in 40,000 new hires, you need an HR team that has the skills and the capacity to be able to really bring these folks on board and train them up.
I think that's a good point. And by the way, we're speaking with Margot Conrad, Director of Education and Outreach at the Partnership for Public Service. But oftentimes people look at functions like HR and say, well, that's just overhead. That's just bureaucrats getting in the way of the real people doing the real work. But if you talk to people in the private sector, and I've asked this question of a couple of small companies in recent months, really, and they'll tell you, founders will say, once you get to be about a dozen employees or more, you need an HR person. So if you've got 300,000 employees, then certainly you've got to get your HR ranks fully staffed.
Absolutely. So I would say making sure that you know, even in a time of budget challenges here, your HR workforce is really critical to be continuing to invest in. I wanted to mention on the legislative front, because there's actually been some recent legislation that's been moving that addresses some of these hiring issues. And so I think there's a lot of good stuff in the works, and I think we'll see more legislation coming out, and there's going to be a hearing coming up in a couple of weeks as well on the Hill to address some of these issues. But there's a bill that's been introduced recently that's by Congressman Wenstrup, and it's a legislation that would do a few of these things. So first of all, it would provide better training for HR on the different recruiting, hiring, and retention efforts that they have. So that's really critical. It would create a separate promotional track for VA employees who are technical experts. So often there's this perception that you have to be a manager to be able to advance in the organization, and this would allow for promotion opportunities for folks that are doing more technical work. It would allow VA to better utilize internships and entry-level talent pipeline because it would expand the conversion authority that Pathways interns currently have to other third-party internship providers. So if you have an organization like the Washington Center that has interns that are placed at VA, these folks would now have conversion authority and agencies could hire them. And it also creates a database of vacant mission-critical positions across VA and is hoping to facilitate the sharing of top talent across the agency. So there's a lot of really good things in this legislation that we are supporting at the Partnership for Public Service.
Yes, that would be Representative Brad Wenstrup from Ohio. Mm-hmm. And yep. Interestingly, he is a Army Reserve officer, and he's also a doctor of podiatric medicine. So I guess he's at the lower extremities of the body there working, not pediatric, but podiatric, mm-hmm. but a doctor and a veteran. So he must have some idea of what VA needs. Interesting development.
Exactly. I think that's right. I think there's what's great to see is when there's a personal interest and a real understanding of the issues on behalf of the members that are putting forth this legislation. And again, the Partnership for Public Service is very supportive, and we're working. You know, this legislation has bipartisan support. We don't really anticipate there being any concerns here being able to move it. So the main issue now is thinking through how we can work with the Senate on similar legislation.
And does this legislation go into that whole issue of whether people outside of the medical side of VA should be Title V or Title 38 and all of that?
This particular bill doesn't get into all of that. There's some other issues that are being addressed in other bills. One thing that is not in this bill that is something that we think should be strongly considered to help attract talent is the fact that overall in government, and particularly at VA, we believe that there should be a market-based compensation system. So to be able to recruit and hire the talent that you need in government, you need to be able to offer competitive salaries and salaries that are comparable to what the market is for that type of talent. And I know VA struggles with some of those challenges just because of the higher salaries and trying to attract folks from the private sector to come and lead medical centers, for example. So that's one element that's not addressed here and is something that we think would help address recruitment issues.
Because that was the point of Title 38, was to be able to give more, or part of the point of Title 38, was to give doctors and the medical professionals directly more competitive salaries. But I don't think it extends to, say, general purpose SES members who happen to run medical centers,
if they're not physicians. Correct.
And
this is something that we think it needs to be addressed more broadly across government, that we really need this market-based compensation system so that government can attract the talent that it needs, for especially these highly specialized and technical positions.
But that bill from Wenstrup, though, no Senate counterpart at this point.
Not at the moment, although there are senators that are actively engaged in these issues. I know Senator Tester has a personal interest in this as well, and we've been talking with his staff. So I anticipate that down the line there'll be more legislation to come.
Margo Conrad is Director of Education and Outreach at the Partnership for Public Service. As always, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll post a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.